right, welcome to the Product People Show. This is Justin Jackson here. You can follow me on Twitter at the letter M, the letter I, and Justin, M-I, Justin. So, it's been a while since I released a show. I'm so sorry about that. I got so busy with travel, went to Portland for a week, and to attend the Sprintly Quick Left grand opening right in downtown Portland in the historic Hawthorne building. It was a great party, great time. Thanks for all the folks that hosted me in Portland. My buddy Chase Reeves took me up for an amazing meal over at Pock Pock. And just got to hang out with some good folks. Hung out with Colin from customer.io. Met Tom Dale from ember.js. And just had a good time. But this week we're back with a really great show. Brian Castle from CassJam.com. He's involved in all sorts of things, but recently he's been focused on productized services. Don't know what a productized service is? Well, listen in because you're about to find out. But first, Stryker Metal. Hey everybody, it is Justin Jackson here, and I am with Brian Castle. How's it going, Brian?
Going good. Thanks, Justin.
Now, Brian is into so many things, it's going to be hard to mention them all. He blogs at CassJam.com. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, CassJam.
CassJam?
CassJam.com. Yeah. My nickname growing up was Cass for Castle, and Jam. This goes back to my AOL screen name when I was like 13 years old. It was Cass Jam. Stuck with it. I got the domain name when I was 17, 18 years old or something, and then stuck with it. I don't know what it means.
Were you always into technology? Were you always interested in business?
That's a good question. I was always into technology. I was, I'm a web designer by trade, and I started out as a teenager, tinkering around with HTML in the GeoCities days, but I was also
What community were you in? I was Yosemite.
Oh, I don't know it that well. Maybe my memory is just not good enough, but, I think my first memory of creating websites was creating one for my band. I was playing music in high school bands and then in bands in college. And as like an amateur web designer, I put together a website for my band. And then, so I was kind of always into technology and also design and design for the web. And I've always been into that kind of merger of creative design.
Yeah. And how do you describe yourself? Are you a designer? Are you a developer? Are you when you're at a cocktail party, how do you introduce yourself?
Yeah, for years when someone says, "What do you do?" I say web designer, and it's harder to say that these days because I don't exactly do web design consulting work anymore. Anytime you say web design at a cocktail party or meet, anywhere, it's like, "Oh, you do websites? Can you make me a website?" And it's like, "No, not really." I guess I'm a web designer by trade. The developer side of things, I can develop. I'm much more a front end guy. So I know WordPress development pretty well, and I know HTML, CSS. That's been my thing for years. Back end development, database stuff, I better not touch it because I'll probably break something.
Not as much. Yeah. Now, how did you first get into products? If you've always been into computers and the web, when did you first get interested in products?
Yeah, so I was a freelance web designer. So I started after college. I couldn't get a job in the music industry, so I got a job at a web design agency in New York and worked there full time for 3 years, and then I went out on my own as a freelance web designer and did freelance web work for years. I became a freelancer about 7 or 8 years ago, and then about 3 years ago, I started really making the push to get out of the client work and into products. And so the first digital product that I created was WordPress themes. I started a little business called Theme Jam. It's actually still there today, you know, still up and running today. It's very much a small side business that I rarely touch anymore. But I designed a couple of premium WordPress themes, put those up for sale on my own site, and that was my first taste of working on something and then getting paid for it, and it's detached from my time, and yeah. That was pretty exciting.
And what was your inspiration for that? How did you know that that was something that was even possible? Did you have some people you were looking up to at the time?
Yeah, definitely. I was heavily into following Adi Painar, founder of WooThemes, co-founder of WooThemes, and Jason Schuler, Press 75, Brian Gardner, Studio Press. Those guys are kind of like the pioneers of that WordPress themes market. And I mean, when I started, coming across those guys like on Twitter and their blogs and things, like up until then, I honestly never really considered the idea of getting into products or even calling myself an entrepreneur. You hear a lot of these stories of business owners who are like, ever since I was a young kid, I wanted to own my own business. And I never thought of it that way. I kind of just like one year after the next, I kind of just fall into doing this other thing. Like when I became a freelancer for the first time, I was working at this agency and I saw that they were hiring freelancers. And I was like, I guess you can be a freelancer at this. So I kind of got into that. And then a few years after that, I see, these guys are selling WordPress themes. I could do that,
Yeah.
So I kind of got into it that way.
Sometimes it's just knowing that something's even possible. If you haven't thought about it before or you were never introduced to it, seeing someone else do it, it's kind of just like a light bulb. This whole new world is available. And so you jumped in, you started creating themes. And how did that go? What was the launch of your custom themes like?
Yeah, at this point I had no education when it came to launching products or bootstrapping or entrepreneurship or anything. So I spent months, designing and building all these themes. I designed this like fancy e-commerce site to sell these themes. I spent way much more time and effort on this than I probably should have. But then I finally, the launch day came, and at this point I'm spending like all-nighters, putting this stuff together and really kind of hustling, doing client work during the day as well. It launched, and I remember I was so afraid that I would launch it and there would be no sales,
Fear? Why was that a fear? Why do you think that? Because that comes up all the time.
Yeah.
What is it about launching to no sales that scares people so much?
I guess it's did I just waste all this time and energy? And but at the same time, I did go into that first thing like, this is an experiment. Like I want to try my hand at this and see if I can do it. I didn't expect it to be a huge success by any means, but I just really didn't want it to be a total flop, like zero sales. And I had a first sale in that first day, and I remember like, oh my God, like somebody, like, is that real? Is this order real? So that was a really great feeling. And then, that feeling of launching new things, it never goes away. Today, years later, I've launched a number of product business since then. Next week, I'm launching a new course on my site, and I still have that fear right now. It's totally possible that zero people will buy this thing, and it freaks me out.
Yeah. I think for me, that fear is often more social than anything else. That idea of we're pretty transparent these days when we're working on things. We often, start promoting something before it's even finished or launched. And this idea of releasing something that, and having people socially know that it didn't work out,
I think is a big pressure nowadays.
Totally. It is. It really is. Especially, you know, we web people, you know, we really put ourselves out there. We're blogging, we're on Twitter, you know, especially if you do what a lot of us do, myself included, is I blog about the things that I'm working on and how they're going and the lessons that I'm learning. And so, you know, I do try to be as open as I can. And if it is a total flop, you know, I think I will talk about it. And so, you know, I try to like share these lessons and I also try to learn things the hard way. I think that's a really important, that's kind of guided me the whole way through, is like just get to that launch, see what goes right, see what goes wrong, and learn something and do it better the next time.
What do you mean learn things the hard way? What does that mean for you?
I'm all about learning by doing. You know, you can read business books, and I read a couple of them here and there, but I never really, that doesn't really help me in my career. That might give me some inspiration. And there are all sorts of really great bloggers and podcasts to tune into, but again, I kind of just tune into those just for inspiration. The things that I've really learned that have helped me move forward and get from point A to point B, it's from trying it, it's from putting in the hours and getting my hands dirty and also putting myself out there and exposing myself and having that fear, you know, it's going through all of that. That's what has really pushed me from one level to the next, for sure.
Yeah. I've got a question from the chat room here. Helen wants to know, do you know where that first sale came from? And how did you promote that theme business when you launched it? What were the things you did?
That's a great question. So this goes back to like 2009, I think, when I launched that, or maybe early 2010 or something. So it's hard for me to really remember. I was blogging and I was on Twitter, but I didn't have much of a following back then.
How did people hear about it then? How did people know that you even had something for sale that was worth buying?
I'm trying to remember, actually. I think I was running some Google AdWords. I think I probably tried that.
Okay.
I had something like maybe 500 or 600 Twitter followers, which was not that many, but I think maybe one or two of them helped share it. Eventually, I don't know if this happened from day one, but at some point, Theme Jam was accepted into the WordPress.org commercial theme vendors page.
Okay, yeah.
So that definitely helped, and that still helps today. I mean, that drives whatever sales we're getting today, for sure. So we're on that page. Of course, that brings in a lot of traffic. I don't remember if that happened from day one or not, but it was soon after the launch. So that's, yeah. I don't know where the first customer came from, but the first few in the first month probably came that way.
So you tried a few things. You had a sale. You're excited. You kind of caught the bug. What did you do after? What did you do after launching Theme Jam? What was the next thing?
Yeah, so I added a couple of themes to Theme Jam. And I tried to grow it that way, and that helped a little bit. I probably ended up adding about 4 or 5 themes. I think today I've narrowed that down to only 3 or 4, and it turned out like only 1 or 2 of them were kind of like big sellers, and they've sold over the years. And then I focused on building one very specialized theme called WP Bids.
Okay.
And I launched that. And again, that's still around today. And what that was, so I was a freelancer. I wrote a lot of proposals for my web design work, and I wanted a way to create those in WordPress with like a really nice looking way to present it, like a web-based proposal. So I created a theme for creating proposals, and that was kind of like a specialized product from Theme Jam. And then I even gave it like its own site at wpbids.com, And that's continued to do pretty well as well. And since that was kind of like a unique product, like creating proposals using WordPress, you know, a few people blogged about that and kind of spread it around, and you know, people kind of talked about it a little bit. So So that kind of drove some of those sales.
How did you know that was going to be a good product? How did you know that was something people needed or wanted?
Again, you know, I didn't do any kind of like customer validation or anything. That was totally scratching my own itch. I wanted to create proposals myself using WordPress, and I also thought it would be a cool idea for a product, so I just went ahead and built it.
Interesting.
And obviously that's probably not the smartest way to go about things, and it didn't turn into a massive quit your day job type of business for me or anything, but it sold and it continues to sell, and it's, you know, I've been pretty happy with it.
Yeah. And what was your inspiration to build things on top of WordPress?
You know, for me, I was always using WordPress for my client work, and so that's just the platform that I've come to know the most about and become comfortable with. And then I know all the resources around WordPress, like the plugins, and also develop relationships with other developers and contractors that I would bring in on client projects. So that just made everything easier for me, you know. And later on, when it came time to build Restaurant Engine, I had all the pieces in place. Like, I knew I was going to use WordPress. I knew I was going to use multi-site. I knew I was going to work with this developer, and we're going to plan it out this way, and just, I knew the system inside and out, so for me, it made sense. I know that, you know, a lot of developers out there have their qualms with WordPress, you know, for various reasons, and I think there are a lot of merit to those, and it's not the best fit for every type of business, and even for, like, as like a CMS, there are other CMS out there that are, they do a perfectly fine job, sometimes a better job, but for me, as a bootstrapper, it allowed me to get all the resources together quickly and move forward.
Yeah. So what happened, because eventually you launched Restaurant Engine, which is one of your main products now. Was there anything else in between Theme Jam and Restaurant Engine?
Yeah, there were quite a few. There were some things that that never even got off the ground, and then there were some that did, and that I'm no longer in. So I can talk about a few of them. So like the things that never got off the ground, you know, I kind of partnered up with a couple of different people. One was at one point I wanted to launch like some kind of app to be to help me manage my network of contractors that I was building a lot of these mini teams as I was doing the web work, and I started to build up like a web virtual agency, and I wanted like an app to help me manage the hiring process and managing my team. I started partnering with a developer on that, and you know, different commitment issues and everything, and that, you know, it just never even made it to launch. Another one, I was working with my friend Brad Tunar, another WordPress developer. We were going to launch something around sending referral business. Like, freelancers get all this overflow work, and you need to refer it out to another freelancer. We were going to set up some kind of like marketplace for that. Again, an idea. We started doing mock-ups and everything, but it just never really. I think we both got too busy doing other things and never made it to launch. Then in 2013, and this was so I launched Restaurant Engine, but then in 2013 I kind of took my eye off the ball with Restaurant Engine, and I joined up with two other guys to start an app called Sweet Process. And this is an app that still exists today. I was one of the three co-founders, and together we built it. There was a developer, another guy kind of doing the business marketing stuff, and I was in charge of all the design for Sweet Process. We launched that really quickly, and we had some paying customers, and it actually did pretty well, and it started to grow. But it was through that year of 2013 that I was also very, very heavily involved in Restaurant Engine, and I was splitting my time between the two, and writing a lot on CastGen and doing books and everything. So long story short, by the end of 2013, I was spread way too thin, and I had to make a very difficult decision to step out of Sweet Process and focus solely on Restaurant Engine. That's what happened.
Huh. So you're pretty driven. You were driven to get, you know, keep doing new things, keep releasing new stuff. What was driving you all this time to do all this stuff?
I guess you can say driven. I don't know. I think part of it is the classic like shiny object syndrome. You see an idea, you see an opportunity, you just stop everything and you go after it. And that was the way I operated for a while there, and that's what led me into all these different projects and businesses. I think what I learned is really the power of focus and how much that truly helps when you're trying to grow something, you know, from one level to the next level.
Yeah.
When you have your eye on an end goal for one thing, if you're working on two end goals in parallel, it's a very difficult thing to do. And that was kind of like the big lesson that I learned. Yeah.
So, and what was it about Restaurant Engine that you said, you know, I've got to focus on this? This is the one thing I'm going to, you know, this is the basket I'm going to put my eggs in.
Yeah, so I started that in, I think I launched it in 2012, early 2012, and it slowly grew in 2012, and then it continued to grow in 2013, but again, in 13, I was starting to really lose that focus, getting spread into all these other projects, and Restaurant Engine was continuously growing until the end of 2013 when it kind of plateaued, and that was kind of a big wake-up call for me. That's when I really learned that I'm not focused enough, and if I continue to go down this path, that stagnation is going to turn into a dip. And then I regained that focus, and it went back up. I guess the reason why I chose that is because I started it earlier. I was really invested in that in terms of time, in terms of the money that I spent on it, and just, you know, I grew it from the ground up, and it was thriving, it was growing. I couldn't just let it like flounder, so I kind of stuck with that, and that's kind of where I'm at today.
Yeah, and why restaurants? Why that sounds like a hard thing actually. Selling websites to restaurants. What was it about that market that made you choose it?
It's a good question. You know, I don't have any special connection to the restaurant industry other than waiting tables back in college. But the original idea was just that I wanted to do some kind of hosted web design service built on built on WordPress. And again, I knew WordPress really well. I knew WordPress multi-site. I knew all the ins and outs. The pain point that I saw was that a lot of these small business clients, they don't know how to put all the pieces together. As easy as it is for us web people to go out and get a web host and install WordPress and find a theme, install the theme, configure the options, get all the plugins that you need, put in your content, customize it. You know, there is a lot of know-how there. You know, and most small business owners don't even know step one. They don't even know like what a web host is. So, you know, I wanted to put together a totally streamlined solution for getting a high quality, professionally built WordPress website. Like, sign up, a few clicks, and there it is. And I just kind of saw a big gap there. So I wanted to put together like this hosted service. What I found was, If we just serve everyone, like all sorts of businesses, restaurants, portfolio sites, plumbers, like anyone who wanted a website, there would be way too many variables, different requirements, you know. So I knew that I needed to niche down into some kind of vertical that had a similar set of requirements. And then I just started thinking of, okay, there's restaurants, there's lawyers, there's doctors, and I think all of them are viable verticals, right? So I kind of landed on restaurants because I saw that as something you know, worldwide market, and it's a very clear feature set. Like, every restaurant needs a menu. Every restaurant needs to show their hours. They need location information. They need, upcoming events. So I saw, like, a way to really standardize the, setting up a website so that then we only need to focus on building those standard features and those options.
Yeah. In the last part of this podcast, I want to talk about a few things. So we'll see if we can get through them all. Mm-hmm. The first is I want to talk about what has it been like serving that vertical? Because there's a different train of thought, which is don't start with a vertical, especially a vertical that you don't know. Start with an audience or a community that you're already a part of. And so you've chosen this industry basically that you're not a part of. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how's that worked out for you? What have been the challenges?
Yes.
Would you do that again? The second thing let's get to is just what's happening in WordPress these days, and is that still an ecosystem that it's worth launching products into? So let's start with the first one.
Okay.
How has that been serving restaurants? Would you do it again?
it has been difficult. I'll say that. I know that you write a lot about building audiences and starting with a community that you're already a part of, and I think that is very wise for sure. So with Restaurant Engine, I learned a lot of things the hard way again, and. I started by doing content marketing, and we still do heavily with content marketing. We do a lot of blogging, and we have an email newsletter for that, and we've done pretty well with the organic search engine rankings. And so that's been our main source of traffic. So that is how we actually reach that market. And now when it comes to content marketing, the conventional wisdom is like, the founder, you do all of the blogging and the writing yourself. And if you're not part of that industry, it is an uphill battle. And yeah, for us it was. I mean, in the beginning, I did write a lot of those articles, but my entire goal since day one with Restaurant Engine was to build a business that runs without me. Build it into a it just run on autopilot, And one of the first things that I did to remove myself from the service was start to hire writers and kind of systemize and automate that whole process of writing blog articles, getting it out to the email newsletter. So today, that whole thing runs completely without me. We can just consistently put out content. My writers are awesome, and they do a great job. And then I also removed myself from all of the other service. Well, I guess let me step back. The other big thing that I learned over the years of running Restaurant Engine is it went from being like a do-it-yourself SaaS type of service. I wanted it to be any restaurant owner can come on and sign up and create their own site and be done with it. It turned into much more a done-for-you service, like a productized service. So we still bill like it's a SaaS, software as a service, but we, today we have like a setup fee and they sign up and we create their website for them. Before that, we even do like a phone consultation, sometimes several phone calls with new leads as they come in. Then my team sets up their website, inputs their food menu for them, makes customization tweaks, and then ongoing we make like updates for it, like they need to change their menu or something, we do that for them. It's all done for you. And again, over the last year or two, I've removed myself completely from all of this, right? So new lead comes in, my team calls them up and does the consultation. We have a system and a procedure for that and the follow-up sequence. Then my support team sets up their website and inputs all their content. They do the back and forth, and it all just gets handled without me, and I just kind of focus on the marketing and the big picture. And so it has been like an uphill battle. Like, me not personally being in that audience. But at the same time, I've just been so focused on systemizing it and getting to that goal of building a business that runs and grows without me, that I can focus on other things. And I think that's basically what I've done. And it's been an evolution. Like I thought it would be totally like hands-off, do it yourself, and it has turned into productized service and with building a team and processes and systems. And, you know, but getting to your question about serving your audience, someone like a community that you're a part of, kind of in parallel, I've been doing that with castjam.com and my blogging and teaching, and that is where I'm actively trying to serve the people, like my people, you know, fellow bootstrappers, freelancers getting into bootstrapping products. That's who I'm writing for. That's who I teach courses for. So in that sense, on that side of what I do, I'm very much kind of following your philosophy there of like serving that audience.
Yeah. And I think I'm always kind of revising what I think. And, you know, the nice thing about building something out of the community you're a part of, I mean, the benefits are obvious. You know, you know how to talk to those people. You know where they hang out. You already hopefully have some sort of network. You've got a built-in advantage. Sometimes I think we don't cast a wide enough net when we're considering those things. For example, people often default to, I'm going to serve DIYers, do-it-yourselfers. And so there's a lot of us that are kind of focused on that market. But, you know, whatever you do for work professionally during the day could also be something. You could also look at all the customers you've served in the past.
There are always problems and pain points and needs in within our own community that we can look to. But, I mean, I was a professional web designer, and I felt the restaurant world is a part of the web that desperately needs the help of professional web designers. Not that I'm by any means any better than any other web designer out there, but the sites that my team and I can build are far and away better than most restaurant websites, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of looked at it like we can use our skills and apply it to a different industry.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think there's, again, serving your own audience is still, building an audience regardless, no matter what you're doing, I think is still important. Serving a community you're already a part of, I think sometimes we're too narrow, and sometimes we're still following just what other people have done before us, and you know, what I'm thinking about a lot lately is what are other communities I'm a part of that aren't being served, and maybe they're not immediately obvious, you know, like initially. I would say, you know, my audience is product people because I started this podcast and I all of a sudden had an audience. But that was just because it was the first thing that came to mind. It's like, okay, well, that's an audience I already have. It's a community I'm already part of. But if I keep thinking like wider and wider, it's like, well, I'm also part of the software development community, like the bigger software development community, a community of managers. You know, there's this big group of people that are managers for a living.
Yeah.
So I like that you're thinking about that too, and this idea of kind of expanding what it means to be a part of a group, and sometimes also just looking for opportunities. It's okay to break some rules too and go after a market.
Yeah, and I think it's also about thinking about, and I did not think about this very much early on in the beginning of Restaurant Engine, but how will you reach the market that you're going after, you know? And I think today I would be a little bit, I would take that much more into account than I did. Like with Restaurant Engine, I never really even considered that we would have to rely so heavily on phone sales. We speak over the phone with every new customer. And I never considered myself a salesperson, certainly not a telephone salesperson, you know. But you know, when I realized like that's the only way to get customers to sign up, it's like, all right, well, I guess I gotta figure out how to talk on the phone to these people, and then I had to figure out how to train someone else to do it so that I didn't have to do it. So like thinking about how you're going to market and how you're going to reach your audience, if it's not in your particular, if you're not part of that community, then there are certainly avenues that you can take, whether it's systemizing and delegating or even looking at other channels like, you know, paid acquisition and whatnot. But then, you know, looking at like the blogging and teaching and on Cash Jam and everything, that, like, I don't want to outsource any of it because I love writing for these people. They're my people, and I don't ever want to, you know, really outsource the content creation. I do it because that's what I enjoy doing the most, you know. So it's, there's that kind of flip side to everything.
Yeah, exactly. Is it getting harder to be in your space now? I'm thinking about, especially about Squarespace. It's a huge, huge competitor. And, you know, they've invested quite a bit in, you know, making something really low cost and easy to use. Is it becoming harder on the, you know, the WordPress hosting businesses?
You know, I think just being a web designer in general, I think all web designers are up against that. You know, yeah, we see it for sure. You know, Squarespace, you know, GoDaddy site builder. I mean, a lot of small business owners just go to whatever they see first, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that, especially as a bootstrapped business, there's more than enough room in the world to serve your niche market. You know, we have a tiny, tiny drop of a sliver of the restaurant market, you know, and it probably won't ever get much bigger than that. So
how do you compete with those folks? What are some things? Are you actively trying to differentiate yourself, or?
I mean, we do a few things to position ourselves, right? So in conversations when I'm talking to new customers about that, they bring up, or they say, like, you know, we're currently using GoDaddy or we're currently using Squarespace or something. The response that we have is, look, we are built for restaurants. And number one, we're designed specifically for restaurants and food trucks. We get a lot of them as well. So, you know, our feature set is perfectly designed to exactly what you need, and then we talk about that. The other piece is that, look, it's a professionally designed website. We're giving you everything that hiring a web designer would give you at literally at a fraction of the cost. I mean, so what we've been trying to do, and I think successfully, I hope, is that we don't compete so much with the free versions and the do-it-yourself website builders. We're a productized service, so we're competing with hiring the local web designer down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And we even have a graph, like, on our website, like Restaurant Engine versus hiring a web designer. And, you know, you can pay a couple $1,000s to hire a web designer, but then you have to go find your own hosting. And you need a mobile site. That usually costs a little bit extra. And you need this, and you need that. And then you just line it all up. It's like, all right, well, we have professionally designed templates. They're all mobile optimized. The cost is a fraction of the average cost of hiring a freelancer. So it becomes kind of a no-brainer when you position it the right way.
Yeah. Now, you've been talking a lot about productized service lately. What is a productized service?
Yeah, so, you know, again, with Restaurant Engine, we've kind of evolved into this. And so I've been writing and teaching a lot about this. My new course called Productize, of course, is all about this. And basically, the way that I define a productized service is it's one specific service with one highly compelling value proposition packaged at a set price and a set scope. So you compare that to the typical freelancer or consulting engagement where you have to do like these discovery meetings and you needs analysis and you write up a long proposal and you have to give an estimate. and you figure out all the different requirements, and then you give them the price quote, and then maybe or maybe not they take you up on it. This is much different. This is, look, we do A, B, and C, and it's designed for you, the ideal customer. Here's the price. Buy now. You know, it's no negotiation, no discovery process. And then it's the other piece of this is that it is a done-for-you service. It's not a do-it-yourself. It's not necessarily software. You might use software to help streamline your process, but it's a done-for-you service, which can then be it can be designed to run with you, like staying small, solo, like a productized consulting situation, or it can be a productized service where it's designed to scale up processes, systems, you know, building a team, delegating as the founder, you know, removing yourself. I've been talking to so many of these founders of productized services and all these case study interviews. You know, you got someone like Dan Norris, WP Curve, right? They are growing like crazy. I think they're hiring like a new employee every single week. When I spoke to them a couple weeks ago, they had 20 employees. They're adding customers like crazy. They do live customer support for WordPress sites. And this is all done manually. This is, you know, speaking to customers. And they've been able to scale that up, systemize it, and it just runs like a machine. And then on the other end, you have productized consultants, right? Just before this call, I was talking to Jared Drysdale, who launched a landing page in a day. It does what it sounds like it does. You know, he'll design and write the copy for your landing page in one day. And there's a set price on that. And I think within the first week, he actually booked like 7 of these landing page in a day projects. So you just see, like, this is kind of becoming a really exciting alternative to like the freelance model of doing things. And it's also, you know, if you're bootstrapping a product, you want to get into building a software product, or you want to transition from being a freelancer to being a product business, the other thing that I'm hearing in all these case studies is that like a productized service helps you launch so much quicker. I mean, Jared literally launched his thing in one day and had a paying customer like by day 2. Spoke to Adam Clark, he does WP Theory. I mean, he launched the thing in a weekend. Just launching to paying customers just by packaging up one specific service. Of course, there's a lot more that goes into it. You know, you got to develop a strong value proposition and know who your customer is, who your audience is, and all that. But yeah.
And what's the process for doing this? So if you were a freelancer sitting at home listening to this right now, what kind of process would you do to discover that thing that you should offer, and where would you go from there?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's all about finding your one thing, and it's really about focus. You have to shift your mindset from as a freelancer, as a consultant, typically you'll do anything, right? Like, somebody comes to you with the need for a website or an application, and okay, let's talk about it, because I can build basically anything. This is, we don't do everything and anything. We do one thing. So it's about figuring out what your one service is and who your one customer is. So you don't want to serve everyone and everyone. It's just like, how can I make this the most ideal service for the ideal customer? In choosing your one thing, you know, just look to what you're doing right now. Look at the things that have come up. If you're doing these consulting projects, like, what is the one thing that new clients always ask for? And especially what are those things that they're paying for, or what are the things that they include in a scope that are kind of like they seal the deal? Like, if it wasn't in there, they probably wouldn't have gone with you. You want to look for those things that clients are willing to pay for and ideally have paid you for in the past. That shows that there's some real value there, that there's a real problem with a solution that's kind of worth exploring.
Mm-hmm. That's actually some advice that goes into all sorts of spheres, including finding, you know, what, how do I figure out what marketing to do? How do I figure out what, you know, thing to offer? This is something Heaton Shaw told me when I was in San Francisco. He said, whenever I asked him for his advice, like what's working for him, he said, no, don't ask me about me. What's working for you right now? So, you know, if you're thinking about a new product idea, what kind of questions are people asking you right now? What are some things you've done for people that they go, man, that was so helpful? What's the Excel spreadsheet that you made at work that everyone, you know, just went crazy over? And it works for marketing too. So if you see, you know, how am I getting, even if you only have one customer or two or three, what did you do to get those customers? What's already working and doing more of that?
Totally. Couldn't agree more. I mean, talking to customers, a better way of saying it is listening to customers, right? And putting yourself in a place where you can listen to customers. That means getting on calls. That means manning the live chat on your site. That means doing the emails and just listening for those questions. And if you're a freelancer, you know, you're in these meetings with new prospects talking about getting new consulting projects. And what are the questions that come up again and again and again? You know, they always pop up. Like, there's always some kind of pattern there. And then you start to dig into those. You say, well, why does that matter so much? What is it about your business or your situation that, what's driving that? Or can you give me an example of that? You know, just really get to know your customer. And the more you focus in on that one customer, and then the more you learn about them, the easier everything else gets, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we all struggle with, like, writing a landing page. You know, how do I write this headline? How is it going to resonate? Or I'm writing a new blog post. Like, you know, how is this thing going to get shared 100 times? You know, how do I know that what I'm writing about is really going to matter to people? If you know who it is on the other end, and you've written about this, you know, really like having empathy for that person,
mm-hmm.
Putting yourself in their shoes, knowing which questions are in their minds, and just writing the answer, you know, it like everything else just becomes so much easier when you know them.
Yeah, and so what? Let's close with this. What's the next step? How would you validate that? You know, you have a good idea for a productized service. What's the next step people should take?
Yeah, so, you know, the process that I've been kind of laying out is, you know, start with what you're doing and throw up a landing page. These days it is so easy to, like, literally launch something in a weekend. I mean, by the way, back to Dan Norris, I mean, he literally launched to paying customers in less than a week, I think.
Yeah.
Launch some kind of landing page, or even like write up an email and send it to your list or your networks or, you know, clients that you've been speaking to. Get it in front of people as quickly as possible, right?
And would you have like everything built by then, or just like
No.
the idea on a landing page?
Idea on a landing page, nothing else. And, get it in front of people and then get on calls with them. I usually recommend trying to get on at least 10 calls and have a whole list of customer interview questions, and again, doing those like follow-ups, like really digging in. You'll learn a lot on those, and then you'll go back to that landing page and rework it based on what you've learned.
What kind of questions are you asking in the phone call?
Yeah, so you start off like building rapport. Like, what are you working on? Tell me about your history. Like, where are you coming from? What led you to where you're at today? And then what really matters is, where do you want to go tomorrow, and where do you want to go in the next 12 months? What's kind of standing in your way? What is the biggest hurdle between today and a year from now? What do you need to learn that you're not really sure of yet? And then listening to their answers, and then coming up with 10 follow-up questions based on what they told you. Then once you really internalize all that customer feedback, you work it back into the landing page and get it out there and see if people are willing to pay for it. You know, you can all sorts of ways you can kind of promote it from there. And that's, again, that with productized services, it's a manual process. You don't need to go out and build fancy software. You can add that stuff later, streamline it later, but you can get a paying customer on day one just doing everything manually.
And do you think that's the best way to see if people will pay you money is to put out this landing page, put a price on it, and do it so quickly and not even, like, I guess you have to be willing and able to hustle and do the work if someone pays. But is that the idea? You just put it out and then, okay, if someone pays, you know you've got some validation there?
Yeah, I mean, definitely if people are paying for it, that's, you know, that's a great form of validation, right? It's always, validation is a tough word, you know, because it's, when is it truly validated? Are two paying customers really a validated business? Like, can it grow? But yeah, I mean, of course you should keep going if people are paying you for it. And if you don't have the response right away, still talk to your customers and follow up with them, like, why is this not valuable? What is it about this that's not connecting? I just want to understand where you're coming from. What is it about your current situation that's not connecting? And then you learn from that. Is it that you're not the ideal customer for this, or have I put the pitch or the scope? Is that not quite right? You know, just really getting, you know, figuring that out.
Yeah. Cool. Well, this has been great, Brian. Tell us where we can find out more about this course you're offering.
Yeah, so, you know, my site is castjam.com. I do have a free version of the course, like a crash course. That's right on the homepage of castjam.com. And then the course is opening on October 21st, and that's at castjam.com/productize. And you can always... I'm on Twitter, CastJam, and any questions or anything, you know, feel free to email me, brian@castjam.com.
Cool. Well, thanks so much.
I also co-host the Bootstrap Web podcast with Jordan Gall. You were recently on there as well, so that was a lot of fun.
Yes, yes. Go and check out Brian's podcast for sure, bootstrappedweb.com. It's a great podcast, especially if you're interested in bootstrapping and do you talk about productized services on there too?
Yeah, we do. And, you know, we bat around a lot of different topics. We also talk about our personal updates and everything. And I think probably next week's episode will be about productized services as well. So
yeah, I think for anyone that's listening right now that's been wanting to release something and it's been now months or years and you still haven't done anything, I'd really recommend that you go check out Brian's course, because I found for myself this is something that actually helped me get unstuck. So I offered, I guess, a form of productized service, which is a webinar. You take some information, you get people to pay $100 or $200 for an hour or two, and you're giving them consulting, I guess, as a product. And it really helped me get unstuck. So if you're someone that's sitting at home and you're thinking about, man, I really want to release something and I'm tired of, you know, working forever on these things that never launch, go check out Brian's course and see if you can maybe learn how to do productized services.
Yeah. Thanks, Justin.
Cool. Well, we will see you all next week. Thanks for listening.
There you go, nice big long episode for you. Like I said, go check out castjam.com. Brian's course is out right now, and I highly recommend it. Also, if you're not on my email newsletter list, I send a new newsletter every weekend about all this stuff, building products, building an audience, marketing products. If that sounds like your jam, go to justinjackson.ca/newsletter. All right, I will see you next week.
Beauty. Thanks, Brian. Let me stop the broadcast here. Thanks, everyone who is listening live.
Cue the heavy metal.
Yeah, we'll cue the heavy metal here. For all the people in Product People Club, that might be watching this. This is the dungeon here. I'm in a vault. It was like a... it's like a bank vault, but it's actually from a post office. This is our new co-working facility. And this is where I've been relegated to recording. So this is...
The basement of an old post office.
Yeah, it's like... these are all... I think it's concrete or something, but it's...
It's pretty solid.
It's pretty solid. I think the benefit is if I'm podcasting and there's a nuclear holocaust, I will survive in here.
You wouldn't even do it. You know? You won't miss an episode. That,
so. Yeah, that's right. There would be an episode even if there was a nuclear holocaust.
Yep.
All right, so I'm going to click stop. Thanks again, everybody.